The medical use of the compound cannabidiol, or CBD for short, has exploded in popularity over the past few years. Viral videos of children with epilepsy being cured by CBD circle rapidly through social media. It seems like CBD is a miracle substance that can treat anything and everything, like seizures, anxiety, insomnia, inflammation, and less well-known, schizophrenia. Does this cure-all actually cure everything it says it does? Is there evidence to back up these claims? In part two of our series on CBD and cannabis, we are going to sift through some of the most popular claims about the medical use of CBD and, along with the help of Dr. Ross, who is a researcher on cannabinoids and cannabis at the University of Toronto, evaluate the evidence behind them. Please listen to part one of this series, which dives into exactly what cannabis is and how it works in the human body, and what the differences are between the two most well-known components, CBD and THC. Just a reminder, this podcast in no way constitutes medical advice. If you have any questions, please contact your physician. The most compelling evidence for the medical use of CBD is in the treatment of specific forms of epilepsy, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and Dravet syndrome. These are rare but severe conditions that present with seizure activity, and unfortunately, treatment options are limited. The pharmaceutical Epidiolex, which is a concentrated form of CBD, was actually approved by the FDA in June 2018 for treatment of these disorders. Studies showed that those taking Epidiolex had 20 to 26% fewer seizures than those in the control group. Epidiolex is not approved for prescription use in Canada, but as mentioned in the previous podcast, CBD oils can be purchased for medical management of seizure disorders over the counter or at any cannabis retailer in Canada. For physicians who are interested in recommending these oils for the treatment of epilepsy, the Neurology Center of Toronto has put out informational graphics on CBD oil dosing and cost for treatment of epilepsy, all ranging from ages 2 to adulthood. One important aspect to consider, though, is that both groups were taking Epidiolex in combination with at least two other epilepsy drugs, and CBD can change concentration of these medications in the bloodstream.
So actually, there's a clinical trial being done on CBD and schizophrenia, and it did have some positive effects. It was high doses. So this is one of the issues with CBD. It seems to have effects at high doses. So we need to understand why that is. Why do we need so much? And again, there are issues with high doses because the trial was done with CBD in combination with antipsychotics as an adjunct. So is it affecting the levels of the other medication in the bloodstream? Is CBD having effects as a standalone, actually having symptomatic relief, or is it really just affecting the levels of other medications? And that was also an effect concern in the epilepsy trials, where CBD does seem to be effective in certain forms of epilepsy. But it did also affect the levels of the other medications, the anti-seizure meds, so that we need to address those issues and understand that. But CBD did show some potentially promising effects. The effects were what they described as modest. So they weren't in psychosis, wasn't necessarily a kind of miracle cure, but there were modest effects. And so that's definitely worth following up. Are there other different ways of taking CBD? Can we understand what its molecular targets are? Can we find ways of that lower doses might be effective? So that's still being researched.
As Dr. Ross mentioned, CBD is also currently being researched for the treatment of schizophrenia. However, if you remember back to part one of CBD on Hashtag Health, we discussed how consuming THC or cannabis is not recommended for people who have a history of schizophrenia or family history of the disorder, as it can lead to worse outcomes. So, how could CBD possibly be used as a treatment for the condition if THC is so detrimental?
We do know, for example, in illnesses like schizophrenia, there seems to be dysregulation of the endocannabinoid system, and that's been reasonably well established even in humans. So looking at measuring the levels of endocannabinoids in plasma, for example, maybe different from kind of basal levels, or and have the levels gone up to help ameliorate the symptoms, or are the levels going up and they're part of the problem? So that's a really big question. And it, when we see changes in something, we're asking, like, do we want to make those levels even higher to help with symptoms, or is, do we want to actually try and prevent that upregulation? And it's also complex because, for example, at the early stages of an illness, say in a kind of prodrome or early on, you might find levels are, you know, higher levels are actually ameliorating symptoms. But then as something progresses, that might change. If levels get really high, then they might actually start switching off the system, like the CB1 receptor might become, you know, desensitized. Like all biological systems, are all very, very tightly regulated and controlled. So there's a lot of nuance there in terms of feedback loops and within the enzymes that degrade the compounds, the receptors, the whole system. So it's a complex question to actually understand exactly how they may either be helping or making a condition worse.
Altering the endocannabinoid system with CBD in schizophrenia is therefore a complex task, and there still needs to be more research conducted before it can be used as a treatment in the disorder. So far, the research is mixed, but there have been some exciting results. Again, it is important to consider, though, that CBD can commonly cause drug interactions, which could have possible adverse outcomes, or be the reason for why a study demonstrated an effect. Type CBD into YouTube, Reddit, or Google, and you'll get hundreds of results of people, quote-unquote, trying CBD oil for 30 days to treat my anxiety. It feels like CBD as a medical treatment for anxiety is common knowledge now. But again, what does the evidence actually suggest?
So the strength of evidence for some indications that people are using THC or CBD for would be coming to the realm of being called weak. So we've got weak evidence that it's effective. And then for other things, there's stronger evidence. And the level of evidence is determined by whether it's, you know, strong evidence would be that there had potentially been placebo-controlled clinical trials, or that you've got kind of strong meta-analysis, systematic reviews showing, you know, strong evidence of a number of trials that have been done that have shown efficacy of THC or whatever in a different clinical condition. And actually that data is very limited currently to give us strong evidence. The lack of data doesn't mean that it's not effective. So people will say, well, there's no evidence that CBD works for whatever, and that may be true, there's no evidence or little evidence. That doesn't mean that if we did those experiments or those trials, we may actually find that it is effective. And that's why it's really important for patients that we get this research done.
So what is the current evidence for the treatment of anxiety with CBD? Right now, it would be considered weak. To date, there are no clinical trials on the effect of CBD on generalized anxiety disorder. There are two small, double-blind, randomized control trials that did show that administration of CBD immediately before public speaking in participants with social anxiety disorder did show that it reduced levels of anxiety. However, between the two studies, there was only 44 participants, which only results in weak evidence, so more research in this area needs to be done. So, claims about how CBD can treat your anxiety are not actually proven. It doesn't mean that CBD definitely doesn't help with anxiety, but that there is only anecdotal evidence. Similar to anxiety, insomnia is another psychiatric disorder which is supposedly cured by CBD. It is well known that THC is sedative. However, CBD has not been shown to provide similar sedating effects. Review published in 2020 by Sarov et al. Determined that there's insufficient evidence currently to support the use of any cannabinoids in the treatment of sleep disorders.
I don't think there's a lot of really good sleep studies being done with CBD. It's not sedative, certainly not like THC. And so there's no obvious mechanism that I know of that would explain that effect. That said, it's important if people think it's working, then is that placebo or is it working? And again, as I keep saying, we need to kind of understand that and know whether that's the case. Sleep's such a kind of complex thing in terms of feeling relaxed, and it's just a very complex thing, sleep. And of course, sleep's also, there's lots of sleep studies done on, been done on things like alcohol, for example, which people kind of fall asleep quickly and feel like it's helped them sleep, but actually it really affects the quality of their sleep. So it affects different parts of the sleep process that actually are quite bad. Some people are working on THC to understand how it affects quality of sleep. So they're doing sleep studies in animal models to see, okay, it may promote sleep, but does it affect the quality of sleep in a good or a bad way? And that's something we need to understand as well, because something that helps you get to sleep isn't necessarily good for your quality of sleep. And we know now that quality of sleep and type of sleep is hugely important for so many things, like mental health, for example, and all sorts of things are affected by the type of sleep. So sleep science is a really interesting thing. And again, we'll get more information on that, hopefully, regarding cannabis in the future.
Pain and inflammation are also anecdotally said to be reduced by CBD. It's not hard to find hundreds of different products such as CBD rollers or rub on gel to place on joints to relieve inflammation and pain.
There are certain studies have been done on inflammation with CBD and so on, for example, but these are preclinical studies. And so we're really awaiting some, you know, some stronger evidence for CBD in pain and inflammation, for example. Now, it may well turn out that it is effective. Lots of people report that, but we need to know, is it real? Does it work? And also we really need to know potential adverse events, because even if it works, as I said, people together with their physician always make a decision about a medicine based on efficacy and safety. You don't just choose a medicine saying, hey, it works. That's all I need to know. I don't need to know anything else other than the fact that it works. That's not the way we treat medical use of anything. We say, does it work? And then we say, okay, it works. Now what do we also need to know? So that is a really important thing. And then it's a carefully managed process with people who have a physician who understands medical cannabis, understands all these potential contraindications, and then works with the patient to find out, is it working, is it not, and is it right for you? And that's very, very patient specific and needs really careful management with a physician who understands and follows the patient, meets them regularly, follows up, finds out what's going on, and so on. And that is a really different scenario from a widespread self-medication with anything and kind of anecdotal evidence or anecdotal information is of varying degrees of reliability.
I'm sure you've noticed a theme throughout these two podcast episodes that there is a lack of research in a lot of areas on the medicinal use of CBD or cannabis, mainly due to the restrictions that were in place for so long limiting this research. People may argue the notion that, well, okay, sure, there isn't any proven effects, but what's the harm in taking it anyways? Which is a great question. It's important before taking any type of medication that the risks and benefits are carefully weighed. So, what exactly are the risks of taking CBD? We know that with THC there is a risk of dependence or substance use disorder. Does this occur with CBD?
Not that I know of. So I don't know of any studies on dependence on with CBD. But as I've said earlier, this widespread use of higher doses of CBD is a relatively new thing. We've had a lot of data over the years of effects of cannabis with THC and the kind of idea of dependence or use disorder. We don't, you know, kind of definitions of the use disorder, often the fact that people are, they kind of want to stop using something, but they're finding it hard to stop. So people with, say, cannabis use disorder kind of want to stop. They may know that THC is affecting their memory or the motivation or something. They want to stop, but they're finding it hard. I don't know of any evidence similarly for CBD. Because it doesn't have these acute psychoactive effects, then that may not be, you know, such a concern. The concerns may emerge in something completely different, some other organ or system, or the benefits might emerge from something completely different, might not even be anything to do with behavior or psychology. So it's really an unknown thing right now.
So currently, research is showing that there isn't a short-term issue with CBD dependence and addiction. However, like Dr. Ross stated, it will take more time to fully understand those risks. Research has demonstrated that there can be some gastrointestinal upset when taking high-dose CBD orally. Also, as mentioned by Dr. Ross, CBD does interact with other medications and can raise the levels of certain medications in the bloodstream. So it's always important to inform your doctor if you are taking CBD. While browsing Reddit to procrastinate from actually studying, I came across a couple of posts about using CBD to help with quitting other drugs and decreasing withdrawal symptoms. I had personally never heard of this use before, so I asked Dr. Ross a little more about it.
Yeah, well, there are some studies looking at withdrawal, but it was more of an opioid scenario using CBD. But again, it's really early days to understand that. It might be that that's a potential route, but I'm very hesitant to recommend that or to say, yes, it works, because as we've said, we don't know about other things that CBD might be doing. So it might work for one thing and then cause some other effect. So I'm really wary of just of the unknowns here and the unintended consequences. That's what's concerning me. But that doesn't mean to say I'm saying that definitely wouldn't work, or I'm just saying I would be hesitant to kind of recommend something. I think if somebody feels like they have a cannabis use disorder and would like to stop, the best things to contact. There are lots of kind of clinics and specialists that specialize in cannabis use disorder, lots of strategies, lots of ways of tackling it. And there's lots of help available for people who feel that they would like to do that. So I think at this point, it would be better to go down the route of contacting someone, get some help. And that may not involve any other use of any medication, not CBD or anything. It may involve other types of approaches. So behavioral approaches, whatever. So I think rather than people tackling it themselves with some self-medication, it's better to get some help and see where that goes. And the thing with using CBD to treat other substance use disorders is this concern around its drug-drug interactions. So say, for example, if someone was taking methadone, there might be a concern that it might raise the levels of that. So, you know, it's not something to be done kind of lightly. And this idea, oh, it's natural, it's not going to do any harm. Well, you know, 1,000 milligrams of CBD is not natural, you know, in any way, shape or form. That's a pharmacological dose of a compound. It's not a herbal kind of tea or something. So again, it's something I try and emphasize, that natural products are really, once you get into the realm of high amounts, you're looking at a high amount of a compound which you treat in a similar way to looking at high amounts of any small molecule that can have different effects.
If you're struggling with a cannabis use disorder or would like more information about cannabis and CBD, Dr. Ross had a couple of great recommendations and tips on where to get accurate information.
It's still kind of patchy where the information comes from. The CCSA has a number of great kind of fact sheets on cannabis, and the CAMH has the safe use guidelines, which are helpful. The problem with finding good information is that, as you've heard from this conversation, it's kind of nuanced. And I think people also need to be really, really, really aware of where the information is coming from. So if there's any conflict of interest in the person who's produced the infographic or the advertorial or the website that it's on, then they need to know that's potentially a conflict of interest. And that doesn't mean the information's bad, but they just need to be aware of that as well.
The list of disorders that is alleged to be cured by CBD or cannabis is much longer than we could include in our podcast, but hopefully this answered some of your questions for the most commonly cited uses for CBD. In summary, the best evidence for the usage of CBD is in refractory epilepsy disorders, such as Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and Dravet syndrome. There is some promising research being conducted on acute dosing of CBD prior to anxiety-provoking events in social anxiety disorder and chronic usage in schizophrenia, but much more research is needed in these areas. With the loosening of restrictions on cannabis, research on CBD and THC will answer some of these questions and more. Remember, anytime you hear about a cure-all, to keep a skeptical mind and look for the scientific evidence to back up these claims. Thanks for listening to this episode of Hashtag Health. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review and subscribing to our show. You can also follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Hashtag Health Podcast or like us on Facebook. This episode was written and narrated by me, your host, Sarah Howard, and produced by Mary Nguyen. It's also made possible with the generous support of Excel Labs and the Canadian Federation of Medical Students. Thanks for listening and see you next time.